From HanselMinutes.com, it's Hansel Minutes, a weekly discussion with web developer and technologist Scott Hanselman. This is Lawrence Ryan announcing show number 266, recorded live Thursday, May 12th, 2011. Support for Hansel Minutes is provided by Telerik RAD Control, the most comprehensive suite of components for Windows Forms and ASP.NET web applications. Online at www.telerik.com. In this episode, Scott talks with Chris Sells about the pressure to release software as open source versus the pressure to make money as a business.
Hi, this is Scott Hanselman, and this is another episode of Hansel Minutes. It's too much too soon, but it's Chris Sells, and he's back. How's it going, sir?
Too much too soon. I don't know. I was doing well right up until you said that.
It's always funny. Whenever I have Richard on the show, like two shows in a row, people are like, too much Richard. I'm like, really, really, 260 shows. Richard on twice. That's a problem for you.
Plus, Richard is awesome anyway, so I don't know why anyone would have that complaint.
That is true. That is true. Hey, yesterday we were talking on the phone, and sometimes when I talk to you and we have such a great conversation, I stop the conversation. I say, we can't have this talk right now because we have to have it while recording, which means that I either need to quash the mood and then we start talking later, which is hard. Or I just run over to your house with a microphone and start recording. I don't know. I feel like I need to have some kind of a device plugged into my phone where I can record any call that could potentially be compelling. But we were talking about how, you know,
normal people might have trouble with that.
Yes, having someone say, I'm going to record this, is that a problem? At any moment might be an issue.
Yeah.
Yesterday, we had the Google Chromebook came out, and it just felt like I'm just getting a little tired of people hating on Microsoft. So I made the comment to you that, you know, we are a lot less evil, than I think, than people realize, and we're certainly a lot less organized than people – we are a lot less organized than we would need to be as evil as people think we are.
Yeah, I mean, it's like imagining that the government actually had its shit together enough to be able to pull off the controversies that we credit them with, right? Microsoft is very much along those same lines.
Right, right. And I wonder, is Apple that organized? Is Google that organized? And it seems like in the last couple of, 5 years, you know, Google was incredibly not evil. And Apple only recently became evil, just because of some draconian App Store thing, some very, crisp language on behalf of Steve Jobs. And then Microsoft, we're still evil. So now we have three evil companies instead of just one. And I was kind of hoping things would flip around and people would realize that we're not really that evil. And it seems like some groups are recognized as being less evil, like I think web platform and tools, you know, if I may be so bold. And
right, not your team, that's amazing how
it's funny how that works out, right? That may just be because I live in that bubble. But you know, we're doing our best, right? We try every day to suck less. But then I was thinking, you know, maybe it would just all be peaches and cream and puppies over like working for an open source company. And you challenge that idea that it's all magic at a company that does nothing but open source.
Well, it's interesting. So I have two immediate reactions to what you just said. One was when I came to Microsoft a little over 7 years ago, I never thought I would last. I never thought I would like it. I never thought I would fit in. And I really did expect everyone to have a maniacal laugh whenever we talked about what the customers wanted. Oh, we don't care what the customers want. We will give them what they need and they will give us money. And and that is, I mean, maybe it's a little overplayed, but it is what I expected the attitude to be like. And I was completely bowled over when I actually started working with people, real people at Microsoft. And I worked in 7 years, I've worked in a number of teams with a number of different people, and I can't tell you how important the customer is to just everyone at Microsoft. I've hung out with VPs and brand new college grads and everyone in between, and everyone that I've run into, practically everyone, cares deeply, passionately about what the customer wants. So one, I don't actually think Microsoft is evil. I think we do things that I disagree with, but anytime you have two or more people together, that's what happens, right? People do things that you disagree with. So that's one thing. And the other thing is, this idea that any company, can do things that everyone will like is crazy, right? I mean, you said, oh, Apple, everyone loves Apple. I can't tell you how many people, I've run into that have negative opinions of Apple and, vehement negative opinions. Now, me personally, I've had, a couple of iPhones. I've liked it a great deal. My sons have had some iPods and iPhones and they've liked them. I played around with an iPad for a while. I mean, in general, I'm a fan of Apple products. And even before I came to Windows years and years ago, I had a Macintosh 2CX for $6,000 in 1990, which was just all the money in the world to me. And I loved it. I absolutely loved it. So, the idea that you can go and work for some company that everyone loves, is hard to imagine.
Are these companies doing stuff because they're evil, or is just that evil is associated with making money? I mean, I think that putting the customer first is one perspective, putting intellectual property and copyright and open source first is another philosophy, a driving philosophy at company. And then, putting the user first. Like, are we putting money first and then that makes us, not good?
Okay. Well, you have to remember that any publicly traded company, has exactly one, primary overriding goal, which is making their stockholders happy. And stockholders are very simple, crowd. They care about making money on the stock they bought. Unless they're doing something fancy, they buy some stock in some company and they want the value of that company to go up so they can sell the stock at some future date and have made money. And so it is any publicly traded company's job to make money. And so that's first and foremost what they have to do. That's just the realities. And so Microsoft makes money and Apple makes money and Google makes money and all of these people make money and they have different philosophies of how they do it. For example, Microsoft is very much about, selling software that anybody can put together. IBM and Oracle are all about, sending out teams of consultants and setting up the software for you. Apple is all about having a one end-to-end consumer experience that they tightly control. And Google is all about, hey, anything that gets people to look at their set of online ads, they will happily give away for free, right? So that because all their revenues come from, ad impressions and clicks on the ads. So each one of these companies does it differently, and they have different philosophies about how they make money, but they all make money.
I see. So you're saying that it might feel like a certain company is not evil. It's just that they're not getting money in a way that you're noticing.
Yeah. And of course, well, it's funny too, because, even so, I've heard people complain about Google. In fact, they just released their music thing yesterday and, somebody was right away pounding on it, right? Just how horrible it was. I can't say, cause I haven't seen it. I haven't tried it. But no matter what you do, someone is going to have a negative opinion. And probably no matter what you do, somebody is going to have a positive opinion. It's really just only a matter of scale. And so, of course, different companies do different things. If some company decided how to make money by squeezing puppies, probably that wouldn't be very well received. Right. Exxon when they, you know, spilled oil all over the place, or BP more recently, you know, they weren't exactly the most popular guys on the planet, but boy, they make money hand over fist. On the other hand, as you say, Google, right? Consumers themselves rarely spend money on anything from Google, right? You and me sitting at home, we can use a lot of stuff from Google for free. And, oh, and by the way, a ton of stuff from Microsoft for free as well. But it's the ads that pay the bills for those free services, right?
Hmm. So is it our business model in that we want licensing money that is like people, we want money because we're a publicly traded company and people notice it because it's right in your face. You buy Windows. Like, do you think that, like, people always say, why don't we just give Windows away for $99, right? Isn't that, like, isn't, if you buy OS 10, like, upgrades are like $39 and family packs like $200. I mean, it's pretty straightforward pricing. So it seems like there's two issues there. One is being straightforward in your pricing, which is something that we could certainly do better, although I don't understand why we don't. And then there's subsidizing core businesses with other revenue. You know what I'm saying? Like, is it really reasonable for us to do that? You know what I mean?
Okay. So now you've just brought up two wonderful, fabulous points, that are completely different. One is this idea that we have prices that are too high and prices that are varied. Now, on the too high, I will argue with you because most people that get Windows, they don't go out and buy Windows and install it on a computer they already have. They buy a new computer and it comes with Windows. And for that, they pay a much smaller price than they do if they, you know, go and buy it off the shelf. So, I mean, we're talking, a percentage, a small percentage, and I don't know what it is, but, you know, $30 as opposed to $200, right? I mean, it's that difference, that much difference. So most people don't spend very much on Windows. Now, of course, companies do, right? Companies buy, you know, big license agreements. And the reason we have all of the different pricing is because, years and years ago, when I first started Microsoft, we were busy pushing Windows into the enterprise because it wasn't, right? It was kind of a mom-and-pop operating system. And we were busy competing against enterprise operating systems like Solaris and trying to get, you know, Windows and Windows Server into the enterprise. And now it's just a given that we're there. But part of what you have to do there is you have to have a variety of kinds of pricing structures because different companies have different needs when it comes to how they spend money on various kinds of software and services. And you just have to do that. Now, from the consumer point of view, I think we went a little crazy. And I think we've been pulling back on that pretty well.
But doesn't that imply, though, that Apple will, if they move into the enterprise, they're going to need to come out with, like, OS X Home Premium? I mean, I don't know if I buy that.
Well, so it's interesting. Like you say, I think we went a little crazy by applying those same enterprise pricing principles to the consumer space. And I think we've been pulling back on that pretty hard, and that's useful. And so we've figured that out. On the other hand, you know, if Apple does push into the enterprise space, I don't think you'll see, you know, OS X Home Premium, but you will see a bunch of different pricing structures than they have now, simply to work with the enterprise space.
Hi, this is Scott coming to you from another place in time. Are you using agile practices to manage your software development? There's lots of tools on the market that manage the steps of a project, but most of them focus on individual roles. Get ready for a solution that caters for the success of the whole team. The guys at Telerik introduced TeamPulse. It's an agile project management tool that'll help you gather ideas, estimate, plan, track progress in a common workspace. Finally, companies, regardless of their size, can use a lightweight and convenient tool that makes all the stakeholders work as a united team, even if they're in different countries. By combining intuitive user interface and the power of Silverlight, TeamPulse removes the roadblocks that you typically face in applying agile in an effective manner. No more lost data, no disparate systems, no lack of critical analytics regarding the health and velocity of your project. See for yourself, get a free copy for 5 users and 1 project at Telerik.com/TeamPulse. And please do thank Telerik for supporting Hansel Minutes on their Facebook fan page, facebook.com/TeLerik. Telerik. We do appreciate it. There wouldn't be a Hansel Minutes if there wasn't Telerik helping us.
So the first question was like the actual price. Can one subsidize the price? Like, why aren't we charging $99 for Windows?
Well, and of course, you know, the answer is for most people, we're charging far less than $99 for Windows.
What do you mean? You mean when we sell it for $8 when we buy a PC?
Like, people will buy a computer, Windows comes on it.
So you're saying are you saying that we make Windows expensive so people won't upgrade?
No, I think, there's different price points. Now you're talking about the science of pricing, which is really about that sweet spot between how do you maximize not volume or cost, but revenue, right? Where do you price a product such that you get the most money coming in? You might sell fewer copies, but if you lower the price, you'd sell more copies but make less revenue. So that is a black art that Microsoft, and not just health companies, have been tweaking and figuring out for hundreds of years. And I don't know how we come up with our current formula. I do know that as a company, Microsoft does pretty well revenue-wise. So we must be doing pretty well on the pricing.
Of course. And certainly, I think we know and the listener knows that you're not in charge of any of those things. And, but this is an opinion show. I get that.
But, do I think that people would like us better if we charged less for Windows? I don't know. I don't hear a lot of people complain about the price of Windows. Do you?
I hear people complain about the price of Windows as it relates to other things, like, there's the complexity of the price, and there's the actual price itself. You know, and I've had people say, like, well, I want this feature, but it's in Ultimate, and Ultimate's $400, therefore I can't have that feature.
I see. So I don't hear people complain about that so much, mostly because, as I say, most people I know that get Windows get it with the computer they buy, and it just comes with whatever version of Windows it comes with.
Okay.
But then you were talking about, the idea of subsidizing one product with the revenues from another. Do you mean, like, you know, keeping Xbox afloat while it was in the red until it made profits with money from Windows and Office? What are you talking about there?
Well, keeping Xbox afloat is keeping Xbox afloat, but making Xbox $50 because we think everyone should have an Xbox and we will subsidize money from advertising and Hotmail to work on Xbox. You know, I'm just making something up here. You know what I mean? Like, why don't we give the developer tools away? Why don't we give Visual Studio away for $99 or $5?
Oh, well, now, you know as well as I do that we give away some pretty damn capable versions of Visual Studio, right? The Express SKUs. Hell, I've written entire books with the Express SKUs and never missed any of the features from the next higher rung up the chain. So I think we do pretty well there.
So you're saying that people, that the stuff that's inside of Express is... it's pretty amazing, and then we shouldn't complain about, like, IntelliTrace and things that aren't available in anything but Ultimate.
It's interesting. It seems to me that this is a cycle I've just noticed recently, is that we use the non-Express SKUs as a way to figure out a set of new features and to develop value and differentiate for the ones that we actually sell.
Mm-hmm.
But more and more, we're putting those kinds of features, we kind of move them down, right? We move them more and more features into the Express SKU. So whereas the Express SKUs used to be very bare bones, they're getting more and more features from the higher level versions, the for money versions of Visual Studio. And, you know, in 4 years, maybe IntelliTrace will be part of the Express and we'll have a whole nother set of features that we charge for in Visual Studio. Who knows?
So do you think I'm being too idealistic?
Well, it's interesting. The idea that companies don't exist to make money and that you could go somewhere where that wasn't a concern is kind of a very Portland cultural idea, right? We have a bunch of open source companies here, and for some reason, we seem to have kind of a generation of people that live here that are very laid back when it comes to making money, and they just need, you know, they're willing to live with, you know, three or four roommates and mm-hmm. work at a coffee shop in the afternoons and not think too hard about it, which is a very Portland cultural idea.
To give people context who don't live in Oregon, or maybe people who are overseas who are not familiar with Oregon. So I live in Portland, Oregon. You also, in fact, live in Portland, Oregon. So we are two guys who are not in Redmond, and we are hopefully not as affected by the Redmond reality distortion field. But Portland as a cultural kind of mecca has a very San Francisco-esque kind of environment, but it's even a little bit more kind of Birkenstocks and socks. It's we're extremely relaxed here, and money is not really a priority over here. And the open source community just loves that. We definitely thrive. There's an old joke that Portland is where young people go to retire.
And that, by the way, that makes for a very attractive living environment in a lot of ways.
It does, but there's not a lot of ruthless moneymakers in Portland.
No.
So you're implying, I think, that maybe my kind of laissez-faire attitude towards making huge amounts of money and preferring a boutique software development company is related to being a Portlander.
I think that might well be it. And by the way, I mean, if you look at those companies that use open source, I believe that they're doing it to save money so that they can keep more of the money they make on the software and services that they sell. Mm-hmm. So again, they're companies like anyone else that want to make money.
What about companies? Do you think that companies that have some intellectual property, like let's say Stack Overflow, should give away everything that's not the core intellectual property? Like they've got lots of controls and processes and logs and tools around ASP.NET MVC that have nothing to do with their Stack Overflowiness. Should they give that all away just because it's simply the right thing to do? Or should they, is that a waste of their time?
Yeah, wow. So define right thing to do for me. If I'm a for-profit company and I have spent, you know, investor money and revenue to pay software engineers to produce the software that I run my business on, I agree that it would be nice for Stack Overflow to give away as much of its software that they wanted to, but mm-hmm. I would never make the argument that it is the right thing to do. Because they spent money, they spent their revenue to produce those. Now, they can gain all kinds of goodwill in the developer community by doing so. And of course, a lot of their customers are the developer community, but I don't think anyone uses Stack Overflow or any of the other Stack Exchange sites more or less based on whether they give away the controls that they use to build their site. Do you?
No, I think your point is that people aren't going to, Stack Overflow is not going to make more money whether they open source their stuff or not. They will gain mind share and love.
Well, so that's the thing, right? I mean, if it doesn't provide a competitive, if they're not giving away the family jewels, right? If they're not giving away the things that make them a competitor. Mm-hmm. They're not enabling their competitors. And they can gain goodwill by giving their stuff away. Then I think that would be a good thing for them to do. But again, I don't have all the details, right? That's definitely a business decision for them to make. I already get a ton of benefit from the Stack Exchange sites that exist and that model that they've produced and the way that questions and answers work and just the whole thing that they've set up. Mm-hmm. And I get benefit because I learn things on those Stack Exchange sites, and those are good for me. And, you know, if I was building a site that I wanted it to make it work like Stack Exchange, it would make my life easier if they gave me the controls. But I don't think that would make me use Stack Exchange more or less.
Then why do I have a sense that I think releasing source code to help the collective is an admirable thing for a person and or a company to do? And why do I get so in a twist when people have perfectly good source code that would provide value to a multiplicity of people and they just sit on it?
Well, so I think the reason you do that is is the same reason I do, which is you and I have dedicated our lives to making developers' lives better, right? The content we produce, books and conference talks and blog posts and even tweets and the thing that gets us up in the morning and the thing that we push, inside of our meetings and day to day in our lives, right? I mean, Microsoft serves a large number of different kinds of customers. But the ones that we have chosen to focus on are developers. And so we want to do everything we can to focus on making developers' lives better. And so, Hey, if you look at a set of source code that we imagine Stack Exchange has, and you go, hey, it doesn't hurt you to give these away. Why don't you give them away? You could, of course, and you and I do this inside of Microsoft all the time. There's all this goodness that happens inside of Microsoft, and some of it ships and we charge people, and some of it ships for free, and some of it doesn't ship at all. And sometimes we look at that and we go, wow, this is really great stuff. Why don't we give it away? If we're not going to do anything with it or we haven't decided what to do with it, hey, our first reflex is, let's give it to our customers and making them happy. And by the way, a lot of times we do that. Sometimes we don't.
Mm-hmm.
It's not just Stack Exchange, right? It's not just anybody, right? It happens all the time. But the reason it puts us in a twist is because we want to, these are our people, right? These are the ones we want to make happy.
In Portland, there's a whole lot of companies that, they're these kind of open source PHP, Ruby, open source CMS, we do ticket management for governments, or we do environmental analysis impact statements for people who use our CMS or whatever. It's that kind of like small boutique. It's usually 8 to 35 people with an open source application, and they sell kind of support.
Sure.
And you're saying that supports a Portland-esque boutique lifestyle, but could never turn into a Microsoft or a Google or anything like that. Like, the thing that Google really stumbled upon, it seems, is advertising.
Sure. And by the way, so did Facebook, right? Facebook hit the gold mine with advertising too.
Right. And Facebook is entirely based on staying connected with your friends and being narcissistic. And Google is based on looking for stuff. And since everyone in the world needs to either look for stuff or be very narcissistic, then you pretty much got, unlimited money.
Well, it's interesting, but Google sells eyeballs based on what people are looking for, and Facebook sells eyeballs based on what is happening in their lives. These are both extremely valuable eyeballs, by the way, and that's why they make money hand over fist. And that's fine. Those are wonderful business models. But I would never say, in fact, I was at a startup weekend that happened in Portland a few weeks ago. And I just was there for 4 or 5 hours to see the final presentations. But I was fascinated that there was this group of, I don't know, must have been 50 or more people who were there from 3 or 4 states away in some cases. Marketing people and designer people and art people and developer people and different kinds of developer people, Windows people, non-Windows people. And they all came together because they had this dream of, oh, I've got this one little idea and I'm going to do it. I'm going to do it just right and I'm going to strike it rich. And this idea of all of these venues in the mobile space, and in the web space, where you can, it's turning into a hit-based business, just like movies and music has been. The whole thing is turning into a hit-based business. And so the whole thing has been optimized around, what's this little idea? I'm going to spend a little bit of time and energy and see if it takes off. And if it doesn't, that's all right. I have a dozen more to come right behind it. That's a pretty interesting shift in the software industry that has really only happened in the last 3-4 years. I think it's fascinating.
If Apple sells things because people consume, Google sells it because they're searching for stuff, Facebook does it because people want to see what their friends are doing, what are we getting our money from? people who want to check their email. I mean, like, seriously, like, what's our core thing? We're the base of the pyramid. We're the operating system.
Well, so it's interesting. So absolutely, Microsoft started out as the base of the pyramid, right? The operating system. But, you know, when we started that, and I can't even say we, because I was nowhere near it when it happened, but Microsoft started all that, you know, having the idea of an operating system that worked across a variety of PC-based architectures was a big deal. And it opened up this idea of apps, right? It was a platform for apps. And suddenly, back then, it was, people building apps that work across this variety. That was a gold mine, right? That was a moneymaker. In the same way that the mobile platform is today. And then over time, these things happen, right? The operating system got richer and richer and more based functionality. Mm-hmm. And then the company itself decided, well, you know, productivity software is a huge area. And so we have Office. We pushed heavy into the enterprise, and that's where Windows Server and all IaaS and ASP.NET and all that work came from. And then, of course, developer tools has always been a thing because it's a platform, right? You need developer tools. And then databases, again, in the enterprise space. And now, recently, starting with the Xbox, but, you know, the Zune and the Windows Phone 7 is really version 7, right? We've had a bunch of Windows phones before then, right? Pushing into the consumer space. I think the thing that that we've always wanted is Windows everywhere, right? We want this set of base capabilities everywhere, whether it's on your TV, whether it's on your phone, whether it's on your PC. And we want this set of apps that can work everywhere. And really, it's not the apps so much, it's the data, right? We want a projection of your data as appropriate for each of these devices, no matter which one you use. And I think that is a laudable goal. I think that is in my life, it makes my life better to be able to get to my various bits of data and my various applications from each of these platforms. And every time we do it better, more, it makes me happier. It makes my life better. I'm a fan of that work.
Cool. Well, thank you for taking the time to chat with me today about your ideas. I don't know how things are going, but I know that I'm going to stay at Microsoft as long as I can push my agenda, my Portland, my hippie Portland agenda, to release as much source code as possible.
Well, you keep pushing it, Scott. You're doing a good work.
All right. This has been another episode of Hansel Minutes, and I'll see you again next week.